Let's continue our teaching series called Chasing Hope, Driven by Faith. We're going to continue this teaching series. And in this series today, here's what we want you to do. We want you to ask this question for yourself. What walls do you need to come down? What are the walls in your life? There's going to be many layers to this. You're not going to come to the full conclusion probably today. But I just want you to ask this question. What walls need to come down in your life? Maybe it's a test or an exam so that you can get that license or so that you can get that certificate or, you know, it's going to get you to the next level, right? Is that the wall that needs to come down? And on the other side of that wall is that hope. Maybe for you it's a job. It's that job that you think that is going to help you and there's hope on the other side. Or it's just getting a job. You just need a job. Maybe that's you. Maybe it's some kind of something to do with your finances. If there's just something, you know, you just think, if I could just get this one piece of my finances, yeah, then that would get me there. Or maybe it's more relational for you. Maybe it's you've been hurt. There's been betrayal. There's a relationship that needs to be restored, and that's the wall. There's forgiveness that needs to be asked for or received, and that's the wall. But on the other side of that, there's hope. What's the wall? Maybe for you, it's a long-term illness or a disability. Maybe that's the wall that's in front of you. Yesterday, here, we had a memorial service for Marita Lafredo. Marita was diagnosed as a teenager with this illness that would be with her until it actually took her life. In fact, today would have been her 55th birthday. But do you know that she didn't let that disability be a wall in her life? She allowed God to bring down that wall in her life. And yesterday, in fact, there were so many stories. We just had to stop. The stories were just continuing on, story after story. It was how positive she was, how she saw God in her life, even with this disability, and how much light she brought to her neighbors, to her circles of influence, wherever she was. We had even young people standing up saying, here's how she impacted my life and welcomed me into her home. And told me just to call her Mimi, you know. And that was the kind of lady that she was, in spite of a disability that she had since being a teenager. Today, what we'll discover in the scriptures is stillness before God and steps of faith bring you to a place of hope, no matter the wall that's facing you. So let's take our Bibles and let's go to Joshua chapter 6. Joshua chapter 6, we're in this place in the story where now Joshua is leading them. They've gotten across the Jordan last week. That was the story last week. Now we're going to pick it up with now they're facing Jericho and there are these walls before them. And we're going to read where God tells them to march around the walls. And on the seventh day, after seven times marching, the walls are actually going to collapse. And some of you are going to hear this and be like, and that's why I struggle with believing the Bible. It reads like a child's book. It reads like a fairy tale. And so I just want you to hear from the perspective of two archaeologists. And their discovery, as they have excavated the walls of Jericho, and their conclusion after excavating this. So take a listen in on this video.
This is the ancient site of Jericho.
The Bible says that Jericho is the city whose walls came tumbling down. Archaeologist Dr. Bryant Wood has spent over 20 years studying the material excavated from Jericho.
This is where the mud brick wall was located, right here on top of this stone retaining wall. This is the stone retaining wall which held in place the earthen embankment that surrounded the city. And on top of the stone retaining wall was the mud brick wall. And on the seventh trip around, we're told in the Bible, the mud brick wall collapsed and it fell outward and down to the base of the stone retaining wall. And when the archaeologists dug in this area, they found this pile of mud bricks all the way along the retaining wall.
One of the archaeologists that found these collapsed bricks is Peter Parr, who excavated Jericho in the 1950s.
Yes, there were remains of the mud brick that had fallen down. I mean, that wall came tumbling down.
This find of a collapsed city wall found here at Jericho is unique in archaeology. At no other site have we found evidence for a city wall that has fallen down.
Since the details in the text match so well with the archaeological evidence found here, then the best conclusion that we can draw is that at the time of Joshua's conquest, the walls of Jericho really did come tumbling down.
Isn't it good to know that even the archaeologists say that the way that the Bible describes it, that's how it happened. That's how, what they are discovering as they dig this up. So we can trust the Bible. It's trustworthy. And our story picks up in verse number 1 of chapter 6. It says, "And now the gates of Jericho were tightly shut because the people were afraid of the Israelites. No one was allowed to go out or in." And so here they are, the people of Jericho, because of fear, they have a wall. Because of fear, they are hiding behind the wall. When I first read this this past week, and as I was just like meditating upon it and like thinking through it, it made me ask the question, I wonder what walls we put up in our own life and that we hide behind. And for some people, it's their disability. That's their disability. They put that up as a wall, and they think that God can't use them, or what good am I? But God has purpose for you. In spite of your disability, God can use you. And I want you to hear this morning from Johnny and Friends. I don't know if you've ever heard of Johnny and Friends. Johnny, Eric, and Satata, she was a teenager, and she was in a diving accident and became paralyzed. And she faced the wall of what good could I be? What can go on in my life now that I'm in a wheelchair and can't move? And as she allowed God to bring down that wall, God has used her to start a ministry to serve families with disabilities and bring awareness, even in the church realm, in the church world, of how churches can be used to serve families with disabilities. Listen to her story.
For me, it's personal. It began back in 1967. I was 17, athletic. One summer day, I went swimming in the bay with my sister. I swam out to this raft, anchored a few yards offshore, took a reckless dive into shallow water. I knew then my life had changed forever. My doctor said, "Johnny, you're going to be paralyzed for the rest of your life without use of your hands, your legs." And I said, "God, I can't live like this. I won't live like this." Because I couldn't hold razors or push pills down my throat, I knew I couldn't end my life physically, so I was tempted to end my life emotionally, mentally, spiritually. I wanted to just lay in bed, tell my mother to turn off the lights and shut the door. Finally, in the dark behind that closed door, I cried out, "God, if I can't die, then show me how to live." Thankfully, God put Christian friends in my life who opened the Bible and showed me that God permits what he hates to accomplish that which he loves. He permits awful things like paralysis to bring forth Christ in me, the hope of glory. my Christian friends helped me find purpose in that. And I learned to give thanks, even in the little things. And with each bit of obedience, my faith grows, my perspective widens, the world gets bigger, and eventually I wheeled out of that dark bedroom and began to embrace life. I discovered there's a world of other disabled people in dark bedrooms who, like me, need to embrace life and know God. I started writing about this and speaking, and before I knew it, my message gave birth to Johnny and Friends. If there are folks languishing in isolation without hope, our team at Johnny and Friends connects them to local churches and resources, providing a Bible and the hope of Christ. If there's a marriage breaking apart due to a child's disability, we'll scholarship them at one of our family retreats. If there's a disabled child in Uganda crawling in the dirt, or a grandmother in Guatemala being pushed in a wheelbarrow, our Wheels for the World teams will provide a wheelchair and a Bible in their language. If someone can't reach any further than their radio, the Johnny and Friends radio program brings hope right into their home. Our Christian Institute on Disability trains pastors, policymakers, and equips churches. And when it comes to the next generation, our Cause for Life interns roll up their sleeves and they do disability ministry in dark corners of the world. My husband Ken and I are joined by an amazing team of Johnny and Friends, whether at our headquarters in Southern California, our area ministry teams around the country, or our network of partners and volunteers all across the globe. Our passion is to see people and special needs families embrace Christ, embrace the circumstances that God puts them in, and embrace life.
All because somebody wouldn't hide behind the wall of their disability. See what God can do in somebody's life if you'll allow God to bring the wall down. Whatever wall you have, God can bring that wall down. Verse number 2 in our text. But the Lord said to Joshua, and here's what God's going to do. He's going to give him this overview of how this is going to happen, how the walls are going to come down. The Lord said to Joshua, I have given you Jericho, its kings, and its strong warriors. You and your fighting men should march around the town once a day for 6 days. 7 priests will walk ahead of you. The ark, remember last week we talked about the ark, the power and the presence of God, representing the covenant of God, representing the redemption of God. The ark, the priest will be carrying the ark, and they're going to carry a ram's horn. And on the 7th day, you are to march around the town 7 times with the priests blowing the horns. And when you hear the priests give one long blast on the horn, ram's horns, have all the people shout as loud as they can. And then the walls of the town will collapse and the people can charge straight into the town. Now just stop and think about that for a second. What? This is Joshua's first military campaign. On his first military campaign leading these people, his orders are to just march around the wall. And some of the details in here, slide down to verse number 10. Joshua says, don't shout, do not shout, do not even talk. Joshua commanded them, not a single word from any of you until I tell you to shout, and then you shout. And that's only on the 7th day after the 7 times around. So they are called to march around that wall in stillness, in quietness. Think about that. Do you march around your wall with a stillness? Because you, what you are doing is you're bringing it before God, trusting that God will take this wall down, because you acknowledge you can't do it. You acknowledge there's no way that you could knock this wall down. But in your stillness, watch what God can do. Does it remind you of Psalms 46 and verse number 10? Be still and know that I am God. And when you bring whatever it is and you march in prayer around that wall, you're bringing it. What you're saying is, God, I can't do this. You can't work hard enough. You know, you can't set off enough bombs, if you will, around the foundations of the wall to explode it, to make it. You can't do this. Instead of you working so hard and tirelessly for no effort whatsoever, God calls you just to be still before Him. Bring it to Him and watch what He can do. And then you'll know that He is God. Back in our text, it says, "And so the ark of the Lord was carried around the town." Remember, again, the ark of the Lord, the power, the presence of God. It represented that covenant that God had made with His people, and it represents their redemption. So there they are, marching, God leading them. They're following God's lead, and they did this once a day, and then they returned back to camp. They went back and spent the night at the camp. Can you imagine what's going through those people's minds for 6 days? They've got to be questioning their leader. Really? March around the wall? You know, shouldn't we be like setting detonators off or something? Shouldn't we be digging a tunnel under the wall? Shouldn't we be building a big ladder to go over the wall? You know, march in stillness and quietness? What are you talking about? But they did it. They continued. And as they did that in stillness, as they walked around that wall, as though giving it back to God, saying, "We know we can't break through these walls. God, you're going to have to do it." Day one, day two, day three. Don't forget about the people on the inside of the wall. And it made me ask this question. I wonder if those 6 days weren't God, was that a way that God was extending His grace to them? Are those 6 days God's grace to the people on the inside of the wall? Because the people on the inside of the wall have 6 days to surrender. They have 6 days to submit. They have time to acknowledge that God, that the God of the Israel is the true God, and somehow sneak out of their town or out of their the city of Jericho and align themselves with the God of Israel. They had time. God's grace is seen here because we know what's supposed to happen when the walls come down. They're supposed to destroy everything inside the walls. And yet here, even before destruction comes, we see God's grace being extended. I wonder how many of you have heard the knock of God, the call of God, but you've put it off. You know what Isaiah says about this? Isaiah 55 and verse number 6. "Seek the Lord while you can find Him. Call on Him while He is near." Because there's coming a day that will be the seventh day. And I don't know what your seventh day is, or how long your seventh day really, you know, extends. That I can't tell you. But I know that God is knocking, or has knocked at the door of your life. And as He is there knocking and knocking and asking for you to open up the door of your life, the longer you put it off, the harder you become. And there's going to be a day when you can't hear the voice anymore. And it could be too late. If that's where you find yourself, we've been praying for you. And we've been praying that you would just take the next step. And that's to trust Jesus as your Savior. So if you're online, if you're here in the room, will you pull out your phone and text that word trust to our texting number? And that will help us to start a conversation so that you can know that Jesus is your Savior, so that you can walk away and actually open up your life to receive Jesus as your Savior. Because your seventh day is coming. It came for the city of Jericho. On the seventh day, the Israelites got up at dawn and they marched around the town as they had done before. But this time they went around the town seven times. The seventh time around, as the priests sounded the long blast on their horns, Joshua commanded the people, "Shout, for the Lord has given you the town." And they shouted and the walls came down. Again, what walls do you need to come down in your life? What's that wall that you're facing? And hope is just on the other side of that. For us as a church, you know, our vision is to radically change the spiritual climate of Rhode Island, one person, one community at a time. You know, Rhode Island's population is 1.1 million people. And we know that we have to be able to get to at least 10% of the population. You know, all the research says to reach a tipping point, you've got to at least have 10% of the people on board. And if we were to use their research, we would say we need to reach at least 10% of the population of Rhode Island. Are you, on a daily basis, asking God, show me just one person that I can demonstrate your love to? And then handing them one of those You Matter cards. Are you still doing that? I hope that you are. Because that's how we're going to radically change the spiritual climate of Rhode Island, as you just plant seeds in people and just let them know that they matter. They matter to God. That God is for them. And that they matter to our church. But do you know, out of this 1.1 million people, do you know that there are 275,340 with some type of disability? That's just right here in the state of Rhode Island. Now, that's disabilities at all different levels. But stop and think about that. 25%, a quarter of our population has some sort of a disability. And we want to be a church that welcomes those who have some form of disability. We want to be a church that is extending the grace and the love of God and giving people who feel like that they are behind a wall of disability, we want to bring them the hope of Jesus into their life so that they can live differently, like we saw Johnny's story. But have you ever stopped to consider all that goes into the life of somebody who has a disability? As a church, we try to partner with families in our church family, and we try to send them to Johnny and Friends and to their camps that they do. We were able to, we had that all set up for the Rivera family. We introduced Danny and Sandra Rivera and their family to Johnny and Friends. And then they were supposed to go to their camp that they have in New Hampshire, because they have a New England chapter. And they have this camp in New Hampshire. And we were going to send them, and then COVID hit. And so what they ended up doing was a virtual camp, which wasn't the same experience. But Johnny and Friends were so impressed with the story of the Riveras, they sent a video crew down to record their story. And then they captured that story, and they've been using the Rivera story, all, not just in New England and not just in the U.S., but they have used their story internationally. And I want to share that with you because it gives us a glimpse into what goes through a family that has disabilities 24/7.
You know, this has been an incredible year. And a very hard year for a lot of us. But it's been also challenging for those that we serve, because their isolation has increased. And so a lot of the ways that Johnny and Friends used to do ministry is no longer possible. Dear Johnny family, in these challenging days, we are greatly encouraged by the support, prayer, and love of our ministry partners. As we moved into a new year and watched for signs of spring in New England, little did we realize how the world would change.
Didn't really get introduced into the ministry until this year. The church that we've been going to, the pastor called us one day and said, hey, every year we like to sponsor a family at the church and send them to the family retreat, in this case the New England family retreat, and they chose us.
Little hesitant because we were like, okay, they help families with special needs, but do they help our family? We went online and we kind of, you know, checked them out and see what they were all about, and then we got to learn more about their mission and what they believed in. At first, it was really shocking to see that there was an organization that actually did something like this.
Can we get out? Can we get out?
When you're a family that has children with special needs, you feel very isolated. You don't hear about people doing stuff like this because it's hard and it takes a lot of work and people don't invest in us. At least for, I have an older son who's 19, and just 19 years I've never seen anything like this.
Due to the safety concerns for families and volunteers, we were pivoted toward developing a new virtual way of providing strength and encouragement to New England families living with disabilities. Family retreat at home.
We were not originally going to attend that because we didn't know anybody.
Liz Babbitt had personally called us and just to check in and see how come we hadn't signed up and just to really talk to us. And that to me was even more shocking, that somebody would actually take time out of their busy day and all the families that they serve, that they actually looked at us.
We just felt that this is, you know, what we should be doing. You know, we could sit around and, you know, mope around and just be sad for ourselves, or we could make the best of it. And, you know, thankfully we did.
They saw us. They saw us. They saw our need. They asked so many questions. They really got to know our family. And that to me was special, because when we actually saw how many families were at the retreat, that even spoke more volumes to what they did for us, because it was like, wow, we're not the only family, and they made us feel this special.
You know, they have a heart, you can see it, and it makes us feel loved, that we're not alone, but we're excited to be a part of it. We feel like a family, even though we haven't met them, you know, or said hi to any of them in person.
Will you pray with us that we will be back together at Family Retreat in New Hampshire, and no matter what is going on in our world, that we will creatively engage with our families and churches to continue to support and equip them in finding hope in the hardship with Jesus.
I'm emotional about it because I feel like God has a purpose and a plan for this ministry. If you can be a part of this ministry and help this ministry do what they can do to be able to make us feel a little bit more connected to this world, a little bit more connected to being God's children. We are God's children. We have a purpose. We have a mission. And God wants to use us. And with everyone's help, God is going to be able to do that.
Yeah. what walls do you need to come down? We want to be a church that can minister to families with disabilities. And there's some walls that's preventing us from doing that. One of the walls is just we need more volunteers to work with our children so that you can just be a buddy for them. So that for, you know, 60 minutes that the parents can actually come and worship together. You know, that's one thing that drew Danny and Sandra to our church, because we have a buddy system. And that they can have a buddy sit with their kids. And they can come and worship together. It's the first time in years and years, they said, that they've ever been able to worship as a family. But we need more of those so that we can serve more families. Maybe you could be one of those buddies on that rotation basis. Steve Van Horn would love to equip you and set you up and give you all the details about what that looks like. And then there's another wall. You know, for those families, and actually anyone who can't do stairs, we've got that wall of that elevator that we don't have there yet. And by the way, some of you have asked me, you know, what's this elevator? Is it like a real elevator? Dude, it's the real deal, okay? It's not like a little chair that's going to, you know, one person. No, this is the real deal. It's going to be like a 7 to 10 person elevator. It will get every, you know, the 2,000 pounds up to the second floor. But you know, the wall that's there, you know, the good faith estimate that we received was $1.4 million to expand that lobby out that way and to put that elevator in out there and then to do all the demo work and then to attach it to our building, to our existing building, and to get it to connect upstairs. That's a lot of money. But over the past year and a half, through COVID, we've been able to save $450,000 to put towards that. And you know, we're just thanking that here we are at one of the times when our building is the emptiest, that now's the time to start that. Because when they start that, that whole front entrance is going to be non-usable because all the construction will be there. And people will have to be coming in through all types of side doors in this building. And we're thinking we want to start on this as soon as we can. But there's a wall there. And that wall is a $1 million wall. Because we even went back and looked, Pete Worthington and his team, they are amazing. They're the ones who have done all the legwork on this. We have a great facility design team. They brought in a building project manager. And we've looked, we went back and we've even asked the question, can we just do this in phases? And we can't. There's not a way to be a good steward of the money because it will end up costing us more if we do it in phases. We need it all up front. And then we get to start. And so what I told, I invited our elders into this prayer. I said, I don't know why, and this was a few weeks ago, my prayers about this very thing has changed. My prayer has changed to God, would you just give us that $1 million by June? I know that sounds crazy. And it sounds like so unrealistic. But I started to really to pray in that way about this very specific thing. God, would you provide that $1 million so that we can start this summer? So that we can break ground. And I invited our elders into that prayer with me. And they said, you can count on it. We'll start praying with you that we'll see God do something that none of us think that is possible. But we'll just keep on taking steps, keep on going down this road and trust God. Our staff, they are praying the same prayer with us. And today, I want to invite you as our church family, will you march around this wall in prayer, in stillness before God? Will you do this with us? Asking God to do what is far beyond anything that we could imagine or even think. I mean, we could sit back and we could draw up a plan and we could say, oh, if 500 of you would just write a check for $2,000, there's our $1 million. You know, we could come up with some kind of system or something like that. But no, we're going to march around the wall in prayer. We're going to beg and seek God and say, God, will you show us how, will you provide that $1 million? Somebody's got that $1 million. Somebody's got it. And God knows who. And it may be a whole bunch of us together putting our offerings into those offering boxes. Because understand this, anything over our operating budget goes right towards this project. So you can just put your offerings right in there knowing that it is helping us to get to this goal. The people that marched around the walls of Jericho, they were marked by faith. The writers of Hebrews said this, it was by faith that the people of Israel marched around Jericho for 7 days and the walls came crashing down. And I'm asking you, will you join me? By faith, will you march around the walls in prayer? And let's watch that $1 million wall come collapsing down so that we can break ground soon. That's what that first next step is about. It says on your connection card, it says you can count on me to march around the $1 million wall so that we can bring hope to more people. Because this is really about people. I hesitate to say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. You know, we have a young adults that just kicked off. We have young adults on First Fridays. They call it First Fridays. Their original plan was to meet in the youth group room because it's just a better, more fun and more environment, if you will. But one of our young adults is in a wheelchair. And when he signed up, that meant we couldn't have it on the second floor anymore. We needed to bring it down, and that was fine. They made the arrangement and it worked out well. But we don't want to keep on running into that. We want to be able to invite these families and know that anybody, any person can make it to any part of this building. So, will you pray with us? Will you let us know that, Rick, count on me. Count on us. We will be seeking God and asking God and begging God and marching around the walls. And my prayer is that the seventh day is going to be June. Will you pray with me about that? We've been looking at stillness before God and steps of faith bring you to a place of hope. That's what the other next step is about. It's I need to be still before God, meaning you, to take steps of faith, acknowledging that it's a process for the walls to come down. I don't want to lose hope because you know what? You have your own wall. I get it. And we want to enter into your wall. What's the wall that you're facing? That's what this is about. Will you let us know? Because we will march around with you around your wall. And we will pray that God will provide that seventh day. We don't want you to give up hope. I can't tell you what your sixth day is or what your seventh day is. Your seventh day may be 7 months or it may be 7 years or it may be 70 years. But do not give up hope. And we will march with you by faith in prayer, asking God to do a work that only He can do. And if it's easier for you to text the word pray, then just text that word pray to our texting number. And we will be praying for you this week. Now here's how we're going to respond. I'm going to ask you to stand this morning. We're going to respond. So go ahead and stand. We're responding with this song that brings back this idea of the walls of Jericho coming down. And so will you sing strong and with faith-filled words, believing that God can do this again.